We are joined by a big-time guest today to talk about training with Isaiah Livers and possible training with other possible former or current Pistons, just what goes into off-season training for NBA players. Stay tuned for that in today's episode of the Locked On Pistons podcast.
You are Locked On Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's the deal? Welcome back to another episode of the Locked On Pistons podcast. Per usual, I'm your host, Kuka Hill. You can find me over on Twitter, at Kuka Hill. I want to thank you guys for making Locked On Pistons your first listen of every single day. We are free and available on all your podcast platforms. And today's episode is brought to you by BetOnline. BetOnline has you covered this season with more props, odds, and lines than ever before. BetOnline, where the game starts. So today's episode is going to be a lot of fun. I can't wait for it. But I just had to give you guys a few heads up, as usual. I told you guys that every episode until this happens, I will be reminding you. I will not be here for the end of September and the beginning of October for the Pistons preseason because I will be in Jamaica getting married. So I will not be here to cover that. You guys will be getting some scheduled ahead episodes. But as soon as I get back, I'll recap everything that happens. And we'll get right into it. But just during that time period, I will not be here. So don't be, you know, lost wondering where's Koo at? Why aren't we getting some episodes? I'm going to be gone. But anyways, let's go ahead and just get straight into today's episode. So I'm lucky enough to be joined by a very special guest today, Micah Lancaster. You guys can find him over on Instagram at Micah_Lancaster, or you can also find him over on Twitter at TrainImpossible. I'm going to assume that all of you guys know who this is. He's a founder of Impossible Training, NBA skills coach, trainer of trainers. He trains all kinds of NBA players. I've personally been following him on Instagram for quite a long time. I'm sure a lot of you guys know him simply from this offseason. We've seen a lot of Isaiah Livers clips come out from working with Micah. Micah, I appreciate you coming on, man. I really do.
Hey, absolutely. Thanks for having me. This is an honor to be on your podcast. And yeah, I'm just looking forward to chop it up and talk basketball.
Absolutely, man. So let's go ahead and get right into it. So first thing I want to ask you is we're going to get into Isaiah Livers, obviously. But I think the first thing I want to ask is outside of Isaiah Livers, has there been any current or former Pistons over the last few years that you've worked with besides Isaiah Livers? I've seen you worked with, you know, Isaiah Livers, Victor Oladipo. I've seen you work with a lot of players. But has there been any other former or current Pistons you've worked with?
When I think back, Mike Benajay was a player I had for a while when he was at Syracuse and Duke, and a little bit when he started with the Pistons. Marcus Morris. And a few other guys on that team, you know, some of the short-lived players of that team were also in on his workouts. And then, you know, I'm thinking through, we have Corey Joseph. I work with Corey. I've worked with Ronnie Magruder back when he was with his early days with the Celtics. And actually, another one of our trainers on staff works with Frank Jackson. And so he's part of our organization, even though I haven't worked with Frank but recently, of course, it's been Isaiah.
Okay. So that's super cool to hear, but I'm sure Pistons fans will love to hear all of that. But like I said, I've seen Micah work with all kinds of NBA players. I just wanted to see if he had worked with any current or former Piston players. Again, I believe you worked with Victor Oladipo during his recovery process from when he got injured a few years ago. Is that correct?
Yeah, I actually started with Victor when he was with Oklahoma City. And so had the opportunity to take over his training in the summer. Basically, he got traded. So got to be part of his most improved player campaign and his first All-Star appearance. And then we continued to train all the way through his injury and to get him, you know, back and ready again. You know, from our standpoint, it wasn't the rehab part of it, but just continuing to improve his skill sets while he was hurt and you know, improve in every area that we could when he couldn't actually be on the court playing.
All right, so let's go ahead and get into Isaiah Livers. So I don't know how much of this you can dive into, but I have to ask. So when did you first start working with Isaiah Livers, and how did that come about? How did you start working with Livers?
Yeah, well, our world headquarters is actually here in Grand Rapids, Michigan. So
for real?
I'm a Michigan native, so... You know,
I didn't know that. That's crazy.
Yeah, so I grew up in Grand Rapids, started Impossible Training in North Carolina. My wife and I decided about 6 years ago to put our world headquarters here, since most of what we do, players travel in from different parts of the world, different parts of the country to train with us. So where we were and where we are doesn't matter as much. So they're just coming to where we are. So, you know, it's been great being back in the Michigan area. And so, you know, when Isaiah was a sophomore going into his junior year at Michigan is when he started working with us here at our headquarters in Granville. And we just started getting to work on whatever weaknesses we could find.
All right. So before we get into those weaknesses and what it is that you've, I'm going to ask you eventually about what you guys have been working on this offseason. I kind of want to ask this, what are some positives about Isaiah Livers? Like working with him over the past few years, what has like jumped out to you? Like, obviously I think you're probably go shooting, but just what have you liked the most about working with Isaiah? Is it his work ethic? What is it?
Isaiah is just pure attitude. You know, he's been such a pleasure to work with and is by far one of my favorite all-time players that I've ever had the experience to work with, because everything he does is about the work. He's very teachable. He's very open. He asks great questions. He's very intelligent, and just works and is willing to be vulnerable. And as a weakness specialist, because that's basically what I am, when players come to me, they're not asking me to get their normal shots up. They're not asking me to go through the situations and roles that they already do, because they're doing that on a daily basis with staff and everything else. They're basically asking me to show them how bad at basketball they still are. That's my role. And so, you know, with Isaiah, it's okay, let's get to work and let's find out something you stink at today. Now, it's funny because when you talk about an NBA player, you know, there's levels of stink, right? Like there's, you know, but you're looking for any type of weakness that player has and trying to elevate it. And his attitude through that is by far at the top level that I've ever experienced. So that's what I love about Isaiah is he is so committed to being special. And he's committed to elevating literally every aspect of his game. So not only can he play the role he's in now, but in the future, you know, he can accept any role that a team would have him.
So I think Pistons fans, obviously, are going to love to hear that. So Livers played, I believe, only around 18, 19 games last season because he was dealing with a broken foot for the Pistons when they drafted him for his rookie season. But in just that short period of time, I've been a big fan of Isaiah Livers, the fan base of the Pistons. Are big fans of Isaiah Livers for what he brings to the team, his shooting, his team defense, his IQ, how he communicates on the floor. Just overall looks like a great, smart basketball player who knows how to play within his role. So Pistons fans, he's quickly, in just a short amount of time, and obviously I feel like they probably have a lot, they know him a little bit more because he went to Michigan, obviously, but in the short amount of time he's played for the Pistons, he's already become such a big fan favorite within this community. So seeing his workout videos that he's had with you has sent the fan base. Every time one comes out, the fan base is like, oh my God, look at what Livers is doing. Oh my God, he's going to come back looking like this. He's going to come back looking like that, blah, blah. So I think they're going to love to hear that he just really wants to be special, obviously, especially for this team that's in a rebuild trying to get back to glory days. You need guys like that on the team. Before we continue on with Isaiah Livers, I do want to say, though, something you said, I kind of want to hit on, then we'll get to the ad break, and then we'll come back with more Isaiah Livers. We've gotten a lot, every offseason, you get a lot of offseason workout videos. And this offseason has been a lot of that for the Pistons and the Pistons fan base. And Micah said something that I just want to hammer home to you guys. I've been saying it for a while, but every NBA player is amazing. Like every NBA player in the offseason, in offseason workout videos, they post some clips, 30-second clips, blah, blah. They're going to look, they are NBA players. They are the top 1% in the entire world. So like Micah said, there's levels to the word he said, stink. Like there was a video out today of Rudy Gobert hitting pull-up threes. Is Rudy Gobert going to be hitting pull-up threes in an NBA game? No, but if he walked into a regular gym and played against someone like me and you, and not you, because I know Micah's amazing at basketball. I've seen him go out there and do some crazy stuff and some of his high school highlights and stuff. But me and you, the listener, he go out there and do the same thing. Like he can go out there and just shoot threes all day and probably be the best shooter on the floor. So I just want to hammer that home and keep that in mind when you're seeing just these random 20-second highlights where you're seeing big men across the league shooting threes and hitting 100%. So that's why I hammer that home real quick. But when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about what Isaiah Livers has actually been working this offseason. What are some of the things that at his level he stinks at and that he's trying to get better at for he's working with Micah on. We'll talk about that when we get back. But first, let me tell you guys a little bit about one of our sponsors, BetOnline.net. BetOnline.net is your number one source for all your pro and college football betting needs and sports info this season. Find all the latest football league developments, game matchups, news, and podcasts, including this year's college football games. BetOnline is also your continued source for all your sports wagering information, including live betting, esports, and scores. The fastest and easiest way to check in on all your favorite sports and events, including MLB, MMA, boxing, and golf. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to learn more about their trends and action today. And if you head over to BetOnline.net right now, you'll see that Jaden Ivey is third in odds to win Rookie of the Year this upcoming season. It's not just Rookie of the Year, though, you can get looking at already. You can already start looking at MVP, who's going to win the championship, who will get the first or the highest odds in the lottery. All that kind of stuff you can already do over at BetOnline.net. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to learn more about their trends and action today. BetOnline, where the game starts. So I want to thank you guys again for making Lockdown Pistons your first listen of every single day. We are free and available on all your podcast platforms. If you haven't already, head to the YouTube channel at Lockdown Pistons, hit that subscribe button, or if you listen to this on whatever podcast platform, leave us a five-star review. That's another great way to support the podcast. And real quickly, I just want to let you guys know, go and make NBA Top 50 on Locked On NBA your second listen. Which NBA player moves the betting line the most this season? Locked On and BetOnline odds makers present the NBA Top 50 most viable players. Find it on Locked On NBA, wherever you get your podcast, and on YouTube. I think you guys are going to be extremely interested to find out where Kate Cunningham slots in on that list. I think you guys, some of you guys may be happy, but I think a lot of you guys may be a little bit annoyed about it. But anyways, let's get back into Isaiah Livers. So what is it that Livers has come to you guys this offseason? Maybe he was even working with you guys last offseason with it, but what is it that he's been working on most this offseason with you guys to improve on?
Yeah, I mean, I've had the luxury of working with Isaiah every offseason since, you know, he first started with us with Michigan. But every offseason is always the exact same. You know, Isaiah knows who he is as a basketball player. He knows the role that teams are asking of him, and he's good at those things. And I think a lot of times it's important to understand that teams are going to use your strengths and a lot of time hide your weaknesses. So you just talked about a little earlier how, you know, these are the best players in the world and they're very special. But at the same time, every NBA player, if you really wanted to, if you could pull the curtain away and you could focus on what their weaknesses are that are actually hiding, you know, we could always go into a skill enhancement workout and expose some of those things. And you could see, wow, they're not nearly as good at that as I thought they would be. That's almost everybody because they're so good at certain things. And those things are constantly highlighted. So, but with Isaiah, it's always been the same thing. Let's dive in on weaknesses and make sure that we eliminate them. You know, Isaiah is going to be the type of player, in my opinion, that is going to become a type of person that is going to be very difficult to find actual weaknesses on the floor. You know, he's not there yet, but it's his drive and his work ethic on his ball handling, his footwork and everything else. You know, he's going to be a guy that is going to be able to be trusted with the ball in his hand. He's going to be able to put the ball on the floor and create for others. He obviously can create, he obviously can shoot the basketball, and he can create for himself, I think, a lot better than he's ever been asked to do. But when that time comes, you know, I think people will be very surprised at just what he's capable of. And so he's going to be a guy that literally can do anything a team asks him to do when the time comes, and that's his focus. So we're literally working on his ball handling brutally, his footwork brutally, and make sure that he moves well, that he's moving like a point guard, if you will, if you want to go to that level. Working on everything from his ability to put the ball on the floor, driving angles, footwork on the drive, to be able to finish with either hand, floaters, pull-ups, mid-range. I mean, there's literally nothing we're leaving off the list. So for him, we're tackling a lot of things. And actually, I would say it's probably most similar to the work that I was able to do with Oladipo, where our whole focus with Oladipo was, let's go over as many things as we possibly can. Let's try to check off skill after skill after skill, instead of doing the normal focus of let's just focus on these 3 to 5 things. Because a lot of times that's what players will do. This is my role. I'm going to focus on these 3 to 5. Isaiah's still in the level of, let me just work on everything I possibly can get into my game from a skill set standpoint so I can do what this team wants me to do, and that can change game to game.
So I have a question concerning that last thing you just said. And there's a few things I actually want to ask you based on what you just said, because it's very insightful. But one of the questions that I feel like a lot of people have not just with Isaiah Livers, but I think this is kind of like a trend going on in the NBA of older prospects, older NBA prospects. And Isaiah Livers is 24. He's young. He's not old, but like in NBA draft prospects, you usually see a lot of guys nowadays drafted 18, 19, 20. Isaiah Livers wasn't one of those guys. So usually when you get drafted in the NBA or ahead, actually before the draft process, when everyone's ranking their prospects, the older guys seem to fall a little bit because people think they're closer to their ceiling. I just want to ask, do you believe in that kind of thing? And or do you think that that's kind of, you know, dumb to assume? Like a guy like Isaiah Livers, like you said, he's working on everything. He feels like he has a lot to grow into. But some people look at him, he's 24 years old, and it's like, he's going to be what he is for his career. He doesn't have much to improve on. Where do you stand on that kind of thinking?
Yeah, I think the NBA can be a little stuck in that mindset in terms of you can't teach an old dog new tricks. You know, the NBA is very much in terms of that they look for talent almost with the mindset they're not truly going to develop talent. Yeah, there's development that's going on, but and to some extent, the NBA has almost this baked-in philosophy that you are just who you are. And the special players are the players who don't buy into that. They're the ones who say, okay, I know what I am looked at as of now, but I see this and this and this in my future. And so those types of players are the ones that are constantly adding things to their game that maybe no one really envisioned for them except themselves. And that's what I do. That's what my role is with players. If a player is coming to me at all, it's because they're looking further than their role. Because like I said before, I'm not a role guy. They already have people who do that, who are going to get them their exact shots, who are going to run through their situations and everything of that nature. So I'm the guy that comes in as a specialist and says, all right, let's see what we can expand. And so whenever I'm working with a player, what that typically means is that player has higher expectations for themselves than a lot of people would possibly even expect out of them. To answer your question, I think the NBA has got to move away from that. There's been, you know, I had the luxury of being involved with two most improved players before they were. So I had Victor Oladipo and I had Brandon Ingram. In both those cases, you know, those were players who, you know, had multiple seasons under their belt before they finally became who they became. And I believe that can happen at any stage as long as a team that they're with gives them the green light when they're ready. So Victor had an awesome experience of going to Indiana and then he got to use everything that we worked on and was able to have a lot of success. So eventually that has to be part of the play. So if you have a great coaching staff that can see your growth and be like, wow, you're putting the ball on the floor. You know, that looks good. You're moving different. And then hopefully that green light starts to flow a little bit more with how they're allowed to play. And I think the NBA has got to get better at that.
So just to, I want to say this, just to kind of summarize that, just tell me if I'm summarizing it well or getting my takeaway from it. Tell me if I have the right takeaway here. Would you say that team environments and the way a developmental team or development team within a certain franchise, it matters a lot with young prospects and how their careers end up going?
If I understand your question right, I think it's kind of hit and miss right now with a lot of teams, because you know, a lot of times when a player gets to a team, they're not going to be able to do everything the team originally wanted out of them. They're not quite ready yet. That's the whole developmental piece. And then they start getting moved into a role, and the development on teams usually is around that role. And so there's not a whole lot of, okay, let's work on your weaknesses. There's not a whole lot of let's expand, because the team has to focus on winning. And so when you're in a skill enhancement environment, the focus is not about the team in that time. It's not about your role at the time. It's about you. So I always tell players, whether or not you're an NBA player, which is a little bit different than a kid, but no matter who it is we need to balance two things, the team and the dream. You know, when you're in team time, you're focusing on team stuff. You're focusing on the exact shots you're going to take, the role that you're playing, and you need to spend time on that. But you also need to focus on dream time. And that's the time of who is the player that you want to be in 5 years. Are you working on that now? Because if you're not, you're probably going to have a hard time becoming that guy. And so that's that, you know, in my opinion, every team needs to have two focuses. They need to have their game situational training and they need to have their skill training And I don't know of many teams who have both yet. And if you have that great balance, you have, hey, let's just work on getting in your so-called bag today. Let's focus on just expanding your skill sets. And then, of course, we'll spend most of our time during the season, especially on your situations and your roles.
I completely agree with what you just said. And one of the teams that, in my opinion, that I've seen, I feel like does a pretty good job of that and have done a really good job of developing their own players is the Toronto Raptors. I feel like the Raptors have done a really good job with that over the years. So I look to them as a good example for that. But I agree with you. Not many teams do that. And a lot of teams, I'm sorry for you guys if you guys can hear my dog barking in the background. She's losing her mind. But I feel like a lot of teams do just draft the player and that specific role they want them in, and you don't, and that sometimes can hurt the player. So I completely agree with what you're talking about. So, but I want to ask one more question about Isaiah Livers and some of the workouts we've seen. This last one, I don't know if it's the last one we saw, but the last one I saw was the one when he's tapping the button on the cone and it switches to a light. And can you go into dive a little deeper into what exactly that's working on? I've played basketball my whole life. So I can try to take a guess. I'm assuming that it probably at first, like the highest thing, I'm going to take a guess if you can tell me if I'm completely off here. But my guess is, one, it's reaction time, two, ball handling, and three, footwork. That would be how I rank it. And then obviously at the end, like shot making. But that's how I would rank it. Would I be correct in that, or am I completely off?
No, I think you got it. I mean, I don't know if they need to be ranked in terms of what it is. Those are all just, you know, mingled together. So, and there's a lot of different ways. So we've been doing a lot of brain processing speed with Isaiah, you know, speeding up his brain, you know, making sure that, you know, the game actually can slow down. And we do that by overworking your brain at times. And so with our Rip Light, which it's been fun. We've had it for a while, but we haven't been able to actually, you know, produce it yet in full stream. So Isaiah is one of the only guys who've really been able to use it. But basically it's a random light. We have three colors. If you hit it, it's going to either turn red, blue, or green. It will stay on for 3 seconds and shut off. Very simple, very easy to use. And we just assign three reads. So an easy one would be green is shoot, red is change direction, blue is continue. So what I want to be able to see a player do is, if we get to a certain spot, we're executing a certain footwork as he hits the cone, I want to see how well he reacts to that color. Now, reaction speed is great. I want to be able to see how fast he does it. But I also want to see his pace in that process too, because a lot of times reactions cause people to be flustered or hurried, or they blur movements together. And what's really nice about a light is it's a faster reaction time than a human being can ever be. You know, the speed of light's quicker than a person, obviously. So When he hits that light, I want to see how his mind processes that and how his skills process that. How smoothly can he get into the shot without there being wasted movement or uncertainty, and how realistic can he get into all his other movements? So we've been doing a lot with the light this summer. That's one thing that we've done probably more than we've shown. Obviously, we don't show everything that we do anyway, but because we haven't released it publicly, we haven't shown a lot of it at all. But that brain processing has been huge. And his ability, you know, I'm always big on, if I can get a player to get into a certain situation, we'd call it a drop. Let's say you split your feet, ball pulls to your pocket. From that position, you can do multiple things. I can shoot, I can drive, I can change directions, I can create space and separate by pulling to my back leg. And so if I hit a light in that exact moment and he only has, you know, that split second to read, I want to see how smoothly he can read out of that. Because ultimately, if he can't make the skill decisions based on that light, he's going to have even a harder time making the decisions based off of defenders. So the foundational element of his skills is what we're working on to make sure his skills are ready. And then, of course, we can move into situational readiness from there.
All right. And lastly, on Isaiah Livers, this is just a quick, fun one. If you had to take a guess, would you feel that Isaiah Livers feels confident and feels happy about the work he's put in this offseason with the preseason just, I think, 2 weeks away now? Do you feel like he feels happy about what he's done this offseason and his improvement?
I think Isaiah is always going to be happy. You know, if you get to know Isaiah, he's got such a good head on his shoulders. He's so so positive. He's mature. You know, I said from the beginning, because he got hurt at Michigan, you know, the Pistons got an absolute steal. You know, the fact that they got him even in the second round, I think if he had a healthy full season, I think it would have been really, really hard for him to even slip to the second round. If people were able to see him in actual workouts and see him play on the big stage of March Madness, I think it could have completely changed everything. So the Pistons got an absolute steal there. But the head on his shoulders is special. I think he's extremely confident. I think he's ready to do whatever the team needs out of him. And they're always going to have a great locker room guy to go along with it. I mean, this is a phenomenal teammate and a great leader. And so he's young, but he's also a leader. So I'm expecting a really, really good season out of him. And I think it can be, to the outside world, surprisingly good, of what people, might be expecting out of him.
So, again, like I said earlier, this podcast is a big fan of Isaiah Livers. I'm a big fan of his. He's become a big fan favorite within the community. I think everyone's going to trip major when they get this podcast and hear some of these things. They're going to be spazzing out. They're going to be very excited for his season. And I've said before in the podcast that I believe that Isaiah Livers, if they're trying to provide the best lineup in their starting lineup, Isaiah Livers should be starting. And I've said for a long time, or I guess maybe I shouldn't say a long time because he's only been at the team for a year, but since he started playing for the Pistons, I've said that I believe that this guy could easily just be a player who can get up 15 to 18 points a game just off of shooting 9 threes a game and hitting catch and shoot threes off movement, one dribble pull-ups, off a closeout, like that kind of stuff. I think he could just really excel on that, and he's a tremendous team defender. So everyone's excited for Isaiah Livers' second season in the NBA with the Pistons. Hopefully he has great things happen for him this year. I know he's put in the work with Michael all offseason to do that, so hopefully we see great things happen to him. When we come back, I kind of want to ask Michael about some, like I said earlier, I followed Michael on Instagram for a long time, and one of the things I really like from his Instagram is that there's a lot of myths that he's disproven that I grew up training, that I grew up practicing in with middle school coaches, high school coaches, that he has proven to be myths that I shouldn't even be doing. I want to talk about some of those things and then talk about some other training stuff with NBA players. But first, you guys got to hear from some of our lovely sponsors. So I want to thank you guys again for making Locked On Pistons your first listen of every single day. We are free and available on all your podcast platforms. If you haven't already, head to the YouTube channel at Locked On Pistons. Hit that subscribe button. It's the best way to support the podcast, or on whatever podcast platform you are listening to this on. Leave a 5-star review. That's another great way to support the podcast. So, Michael, like I said, and again, my dog keeps barking. I'm sorry if you guys can hear her. I don't know what's wrong with her. But anyways, I've played basketball my whole life. I love basketball. But like I said, I started following you on Instagram a few years ago. And this was when, because in high school, I wasn't as good of a player. I was very athletic, but I wasn't very good. I wasn't very skillful. So then after high school, I wanted to get better. So I started practicing and stuff. I found your channel or found your page. I started trying to use your stuff to try to get better. And a lot of the stuff I was picking up on, I was like, oh, my high school coach told me not to do this. Oh, my middle school coach told me not to do this. Oh, we never practiced this. We never practiced that. So I'm going to ask you about some myths that you've went out of your way to try to, disprove. But the main one that really stuck with me the most, I don't know how long ago you did it. I think it might have been a few years ago. Who knows? But it was the whole, I think this is probably the most popular one that people will resonate with, is looking down while you dribble. That one right there. I'm not going to lie, I always felt like, bro, there's no way that I'm not supposed to there's no way I can't look down at the ball. But we used to have the glasses that used to cut off your sight looking down, whatever. And I remember you coming out with a video, whenever it was, and saying hey, the best dribblers in the world, the best ball handlers in the world, they look down. I think the specific video you used was Steph Curry looking down when he was doing one of his behind the back cross moves. So along with that one, just talk about some of the other myths that you've went out of your way to disprove and how you came about realizing, hey, this is kind of BS. Was it in high school when you were playing, college? Was it after? How did you get to that point?
Man, there's a lot to unwrap there. With the looking down one, I think that there's several layers of myths. Number one, because it's used as a rule, coaches just always say look up, and it's very easy to coach with that. So I think that's one easy way that any parent or any coach can feel like they're a great coach is they just shout out, look up, eyes up. And so it becomes a rule that players always try to follow. So to break that myth down, number one, there's moments in the game where everyone's going to look down. You know, if I'm going behind my back with a wrap in the middle of traffic, you're not going to find any ball handler in the world who won't peek at that basketball really quickly. I mean, it's a very quick glance down. Whether or not you're talking about Kyrie or Steph Curry or anybody, there's going to have those moments of eyes down. So that's first important to understand, is that eyes are not always up. Eyes are active. And so from a game situational perspective, we want eyes to be constantly active, down, inward, outward, up, everywhere. And so if you always just tell a person to look up, you're basically saying look in one spot. And so we're much more, you know, we want players to have active eyes. But then you got to look at things from an actual developmental process. So what I want you to do is picture like a young kid, if they're learning how to play the piano. If I started someone learning how to play the piano without ever letting them look at the keys or their fingers, they'd have a really, really hard time ever figuring out how to play the piano. When I learned how to type on a keyboard, I had to see where the spots were, put my fingers in the right spots, use my eyes, give myself feedback, and eventually I could look up really easy. But yet when kids are really young, you know, coaches have been teaching them right from the beginning, look up. So they learn how to dribble with their eyes focused on nothing. Now, what we're missing, and I figured this out really early on, because as a trainer, you're teaching kids. And a kid is trying to dribble, and they think they're doing one thing, but they're really doing another. And they have zero awareness of how their body's moving. But when they actually look at how things are going, when they look at their hands, and they look at their elbow, and they look at their body as they dribble, now they have feedback. And that's what a lot of people are missing on this, is if I can allow a player to give themselves feedback, they can, oh, my hand's doing that. My elbow's in the wrong position. My feet need to be wider, because their eyes are part of the process. And what I always try to get people to understand is that the players who have to look at the ball when they dribble are bad ball handlers. You know, we're not ever worried about a Kyrie Irving looking at the ball, because he's so good with the actual skill of ball handling that his eyes are free. He can look wherever he wants to look. I don't think very many people will say Kyrie can only dribble with his eyes down. But if you have a player who is looking at the ball, that means that their other skills are weak. And so actually the best way to speed up that process for those weak skills is to let that player use their eyes so they can study themselves. And if you really study, because I had the opportunity to work with Kyrie Irving really early on. And that's one thing Kyrie's always done, whether or not he's aware of it or not, he's looking, he's studying, he's seeing his hands, he's watching his movements, and he's a student of himself. And when you let a player become a student of themselves and they get all that skill down, their eyes are going to be the easiest thing ever. So for whatever reason, people have made eyes this big thing, and other aspects of their game are suffering because of it. So that's a huge one. If you just allow a player to develop with their eyes free and study themselves, it's not really going to be a problem later on. And so that's the developmental side of it. So that's huge. And so people are usually shocked when I get a player, whether or not NBA or kid, the first thing I do is I get them to start using their eyes. Isaiah and I have talked about this a lot, and he gets it. He's very intuitive that we've made the easiest corrections on some of his ball handling because he's looking. And then, oh, I can finally see what my issue is. This hand's not turning the way I need it to turn. Yeah. And then he no longer needs to look anymore. So we make very, very fast corrections when eyes are involved. And then the game is easier. So that's the big one. But I think in if we were just talking about myths in general, one thing that I've just seen over the years is a lot of things are just backwards. And I think because the game is almost flipped completely since the 50s and 60s. So another big myth that a lot of coaches will scream out is they want players to be really long with their steps. Well, especially in the NBA, we got to focus on shorter steps. We want to use length when we have it, but we want to be able to run shorter so we can have more options. We can change directions. And so a lot of times, you know, we have to get players to run shorter more often and then extend when they have an advantage. So that's a complete, you know, backwards thing to a lot of people. We could talk about low being a myth, because a lot of times people are always trying to get players to drop their hips and bend their knees, and they're just squatting all the time. Where in basketball, low typically is shoulders. So I can have my knees and my hips a little bit more upright, and I get my shoulders to be my low, save my knees, and it actually allows me to move better. And so those are a lot of things that would take me a long time to kind of break down and show, but those are some of the common ones, whether or not it's eyes, whether or not it's low stances, or how long a player should be moving. But if you get those right, it completely changes how a player moves and gives an incredible advantage to every level of basketball. So I always joke with players, the first thing I'm going to do is do everything the opposite that you've learned growing up, and you're going to just feel better as a basketball player.
So obviously I'm not an NBA player, but like, have you, like, does the myth proving, does that happen with NBA players too? Like, do you work with NBA players and you're like, hey, that's not how you're supposed, like, you've been taught the wrong way. Does that happen with them? Or is it just like kids, high schoolers, college players?
No, it absolutely happens with them, especially if a player has a particular weakness they haven't been able to fix. And this happens a lot with big men. So we've all been taught to have a gap when we shoot, you know, all growing up, that I'm supposed to have a gap there. We've also been taught that we need to have a gap there when we dribble. In both cases, those are flat out myths. You know, and it takes too long to go into that, but does anyone ever shoot with a gap here? Yeah, it happens. But if you look at the majority of players, the gap doesn't form until later on in the shot. They're not holding it like that. So as the ball rolls to the back of the hand, now you start to see a gap. But when the ball's being held, if you look like a Steph Curry or a Klay Thompson or whoever, you're going to see it pretty firmly in their full hand. In ball handling, this is especially true. I want the ball to be able to hit the pads of my hand, and I'm not worried about it hitting the center of my hand. And so what a lot of bigs will try to do is they'll try to dribble with their fingertips because that's what they've been told. And so if you're trying to help a big handle the basketball better, you got to let them know, hey, you're trying to dribble with your fingertips. You need to dribble with that whole hand. And so if you're going to dribble strong, let it hit this part of your hand and really feel the power of that ball and absorb it. And you can fix things immediately. So a lot of times in any developmental holdup, it's usually because a player is attempting to do a rule that they've been taught. And that can happen for an NBA player. It can happen for a college player all the way down. And so no one is free from that. So any weakness typically means that there's something they're trying to do that they just have incorrectly processed.
So I think I want to end this off with, first of all, I want to say everything you've said has been incredibly insightful, not just for people who play basketball like myself, but people who watch basketball and want to try to understand it and how, you know, guys get better. What do they need to work on and get better? What's the process in doing that? Watching basketball on the court. So like some of the things you just described, so you can watch for those kind of little detail things if you're really into basketball like that. I think it's incredibly insightful and really fun to hear, which is why I followed you on Instagram so many years ago, because it was incredibly insightful. So I really appreciate that. But I want to say this last thing. I think a lot of people saw you in the movie Hustle as well over the past summer. How fun was that working in Hustle? Not just like with players. You obviously have worked with NBA players before, but working with Am Sandler, some of these other guys. Like, how fun was that seeing yourself in a movie and all that?
It was awesome. It was an absolute honor. It was a thrill. And even more so, you know, it was one thing to be in the movie myself, but it was another thing to be able to use all of our training tools.
Right.
You know, so they wanted authentic NBA training from a skill perspective, and that's what we do. So we used our rip cones, our lights, we had our footwork mat, even though they ended up having to cut a bunch of scenes. You know, so we had so much of our training tools that were in the movie. And so that was just awesome to be able to see, you know, the products that we've created and the training tools that we've created right there on the screen. And working with Adam was awesome. Such a basketball addict, such a humble guy. And it was just phenomenal to work with. So I got to spend a full week of on-court work with him as we co-trained, the player. So that was an absolute thrill. And if anyone has not seen that movie, they got to see it. So
no, yeah, that movie was amazing. I watched it. No, yeah, I watched that movie. It was amazing. I absolutely loved it, dude. I thought it was amazing. But I'll end this. I actually will end it with this. I think all Pistons fans, including me, who is a big fan of this specific player and believer in him, everyone's going to beg you probably in the comment section, probably end up tweeting you, please work with Killian Hayes. Just work with Killian Hayes. He has it in him. He has that stardom in him. You got to work with him. I'm just telling you because you're probably going to get now bombarded with tweets and comments about it now. Because anytime you talk with someone about this or talk about improvements, first thing Pistons fans get to, send Killian to him. Send Killian to him so he can get these strengths worked out. But I just wanted to give you a preview of what's coming. But thank you, man, for coming on for real. Thank you so much for coming on here. We had a lot of fun. I enjoyed it tremendously. I hope all you guys enjoyed it and actually learned some things about basketball, learned some things about development, and really liked what we talked about with Isaiah Livers. Hopefully he has a great second year. I know all of us are real big fans of him and hope that he has a great second year. I believe he's going to, and I'm even more confident that he's going to because he's worked with Micah. Micah, thank you again for coming on, man. I really appreciate it. Make sure you guys follow him on Twitter at TrainImpossible or over on Instagram at Micah_Lancaster. I want to thank you guys for making Lockdown Pistons your first listen of every single day. We are free and available on all your podcast platforms. If you haven't already, head to the YouTube channel, hit that subscribe button, or leave us a 5-star review on whatever podcast platform that is. And until next time, I will see you guys later. Peace out, everybody, and stay safe.